Since April of 1985, this is the DX Audio Service.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for November 2011. This is issue number 320. If you'd like to write to us, our address is the DX Audio Service, Post Office Box 473-251, Aurora, Colorado 80047-3251. A yearly cassette subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S.-Canadian members is $28. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. To subscribe or renew, make a check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or you can log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using the PayPal credit card system. Or if you're on the internet, you can sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service in MP3 format. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and sign up with PayPal. Subscribe only if you're able to download and navigate a website without any assistance. Well, without the assistance of a magician, let's see what call signs Dave pulls out of that magic call letter hat on this edition of AM Switch.
Welcome to the November edition of AM Switch. We have four issues, 7401 through 7404, to bring you, starting off with call letter changes. 1000 kilohertz, WMUF in Paris, Tennessee, changes their name to WRQR. 1160 KSFF, Waukon, Iowa, makes the switch to KFXE. 1180 WCNX in Hope Valley, Rhode Island, is now WCRI. 1270 KOZQ in Waynesville, Missouri, becomes KIIK. Also on 1270 WUCO, Marysville, Ohio, is now WQTT. 1280 KVWG, Pearsall, Texas, becomes KMFR. 1340 WYJK, Connellsville, Pennsylvania, changes to WBGI. And also on 1340 KCFR in Wayne Heinen's backyard in Denver, Colorado, changes to KVOQ. 1420 WLET, Toccoa, Georgia, changes again this year to WEJY. 1590 WAMS, Ocean City, Maryland, picks up the call, WQMR. 1600 WKFO in Corbin, Kentucky, becomes WRSL. And speaking of 1600, WMHZ in Dover, Delaware, is now WAMS. This is the fourth time this station has changed to these calls. Does anybody know what the record might be for a call letter change? Let's turn our attention to construction permits on the air now. First, a little explanation in how the FCC works. When you want to make a change, you ask the commission for a construction permit. This is sort of like asking the city where you live for a building permit. But once you have the station built, you have to notify the FCC that you're operating the station under the parameters you specified in your application. This is where we say the construction permit is on the air. 910 KCJB, Minot, North Dakota, is now on with U4, 5,000 watts day and night, increasing the night power from 1,000 watts. They added a tower and now use two during the day and three at night. The new night pattern is virtually a large circle based at Minot, directed to the northeast with small lobes to the southeast and southwest. 1170 WACV, Montgomery, Alabama, is on with U1, 10,000 watts day and 4 watts at night, as they removed four of their five towers and then eliminated the nighttime directional requirement. 1180 KGOL in Humble, Texas, is operating with U4, 50,000 watts day, 3,000 at night. 1340 KTFI, Wendell, Idaho, brand new station on the air with U1, 1 kilowatt day and night. Wendell is on Interstate 84, northwest of Twin Falls, Idaho, and southeast of Boise. 1370 WVIE in Pikesville, Maryland, now on the air with U4, 50,000 watts day, 24,000 watts at night, upgrading the nighttime facilities. 1440 KKMP in Garapan, Saipan, Guam, is now on the air with U1, 1,000 watts day and night. Who will be the first to log this one? 1520 KKXA, Snohomish, Washington, is on, after a long 14-year battle with their new U6 facility. 20,000 watts day, 50,000 watts night. Critical hours power, 50,000 watts. The critical hours and night patterns are identical, being bat lobes to the northwest. We assume the patterns are to protect KOKC. They continue to have an application for U6 50,000 watts day, night, and critical hours. 1530 WMBE in New Holstein, Wisconsin is now on with D1, 250 watts, daytime only. This action is only a change in city of license from Chilton to New Holstein. 1550 WSVX in Shelbyville, Indiana, on with U1, 260 watts day and a mighty 4 watts at night. In April, one of their three towers collapsed. They decided to dismantle one of the remaining towers and go non-directional by lowering both day and night power levels. Even with the seemingly lower power levels, WSVX maintains a large coverage area as their tower is 351 feet tall. Also on 1550, WCSJ, Roanoke, Illinois, is now here, formerly in Morris, Illinois, with D3, 300 watts daytime only. The new directional pattern is a figure eight with lobes at it north-northwest and south-southeast. Looking through the FCC files of actions, which are where the approval is given. 540 KMLB Monroe, Louisiana. License for U4, 5,000 watts day, 1,000 watts night. KMLB has a CP for U1, 4,000 watts day and 26 watts night from a new transmitter site. The action extends their special temporary authority for U1, 1,500 watts day, 65 watts night operation from the tower, which was used when the station was on 1440. 600 KROD, El Paso, Texas, licensed for U2, 5,000 watts day and night, operating under an STA with U1, 5,000 watts day, 1,250 night, while maintenance crews are changing out guy wires and insulators on the towers used during normal nighttime operation. 770 KJCB Lafayette, Louisiana is licensed for U2, 1,000 watts day, 500 watts night. KJCB is presently operating U1, 1,000 watts day and 125 night from a 320-foot long wire antenna 20 feet above the ground as they lost the lease on their transmitter site. This type of antenna produces some odd propagation, such as the time when WNRC was heard in Columbus, Ohio during the 2000 NRC convention in Lima and was a fraction of the power. So it might be worth it to try for this station if you can overcome New York and Albuquerque. The construction permit for 1120 in Manor, Texas was initially for U4, 430 watts day and 153 watts night. They then applied for U4, 5,600 watts day and 153 watts night, which has been granted. Call letters for that station apparently will be KTXW. 1460 WPON in Wallid Lake, Michigan, northwest of Detroit, licensed for U4, 1,000 watts day and 760 watts night. WPON has a construction permit for U4, 670 watts day and 170 watts night from a new transmitter site. They're now operating with U1, 250 watts day, 190 watts at night, using a 169-foot-long long wire antenna until their new tower facility is complete. Again, you might want to listen for this station with the unusual antenna configuration. 1380 KRCM in Shenandoah, Texas is licensed for U1, 250 watts day, 69 at night. KRCM has a CP for U1, 2,800 watts day and 60 at night. They were on the air for about 2 weeks after erecting a temporary test site, which was a trailer-mounted 110-foot tower, to operate on 1680 with D1, 1,000 watts a day, in order to conduct field strength measurements for the new facility. Anyone in the area between Houston and Byron College Station, Texas, who heard a strange signal on 1680, this may have been them. 1420 WVJS Owensboro, Kentucky is licensed for U4, 5,000 watts day, 1,000 watts night, and they're presently operating under an STA with U1, 200 watts day and 20 at night, while they conduct testing for a possible application to operate non-directional during the day. 1430 WPNI Amherst, Maine is presently licensed for U4, 5,000 watts day and 11 at night, and operating under an STA with U1, 1,250 watts day and 11 at night. On September 18th, tower number 2 of their 2-tower array collapsed. They expect to be operating with this configuration for 6 months or until repairs are completed. 1490 KBZY, Salem, Oregon, is licensed for U1, a kilowatt day and night, and KBZY has a CP to relocate their transmitter to a new tower with the same power. The action extends the STA, which has been in effect since 2006, in which the power and antenna system have never been specified in any of their filings. 1550 WITK, Pittston, Pennsylvania, is licensed for U4, 10,000 watts day and 500 watts night. WITK is operating under an STA with U1, 1,000 watts day and 125 at night due to flooding at the transmitter site. Now let's look at applications for stations. 900 WLSI, Pikesville, Kentucky, applies for U1, 350 watts day, 125 at night, in addition to correcting the spelling of the name of the city of license to Pikeville. The address is Box 2200, Pikeville, Kentucky, 41502. 990 CKGM, Montreal, Quebec, applies to move to 690 with 50,000 watts full-time. The license on 690 was surrendered, and CBC programming is no longer heard on that station. 1050 WBRG in Lynchburg, Virginia, is applying for 3,800 watts day and 92 at night on 1050. 1190 WVUS Grafton, West Virginia, is applying for U1, 12,000 watts day, 22 watts night with critical hours power, 12,000 watts. 1210 KOKK Huron, South Dakota, applies for U4, 5,000 watts day, 870 at night. 1230 KELY Ely, Nevada, applies for U1, 1,000 watts day and night. 1400 CKSQ Stettler, Alberta, is applying to move to 93.3 megahertz. Get this one in your log before it's gone for good. 1560 WYZD in Dobson, North Carolina, is applying for D1, 4,200 watts daytime and critical hours power of 515 watts, which is an antenna designation correction from our last issue. 1590 WKTP in Jonesboro, Tennessee, applies for U1, 1,800 watts day, 23 at night. Now, application amendments. This is where we change what we have asked for. 540 WKFN, Clarksville, Tennessee, licensed for U1, 1,000 watts day, 55 watts night. Applied for U1, 4,000 watts day, 55 watts night. They now have amended the application to read U1, 4,000 watts day, 55 night, critical hours power, 4,000 watts. The new station on 690 in Tyndall, South Dakota, had an initial application for U4, 1,000 watts day and 400 watts night, then amended to U4, 1,300 and 400. Now they've requested U4, 1,200 day, 390 watts at night. Apparently, they just can't make up their mind. The new station on 830, Grants Pass, Oregon, had an application for U2, 4,000 watts day, 800 watts night. The amendment requests U2, 5,000 watts day and 1,000 at night. The new station on 1040 in Sanger, California, and an initial application for U4, 1,500 watts day, 2,000 watts night. But they changed their minds and amended it to U1, 1,500 watts day and night. But now this new request is for U4, 250 watts day, 1,000 watts night. 1060 KFOY, Sparks, Nevada, is a new station, not yet on the air, and has a CP for U4, 15,000 watts day, 370 at night. This amendment requests U7, 10,000 watts day, 250 at night, and critical hours power of 10,000 watts. 1160 WCXI, Fenton, Michigan, is licensed for U3, a kilowatt day and night. WCXI applied for U4, 15,000 watts day and 1,000 at night. Then they applied for and were granted a CP for U4, 15,000 watts day and 1,000 at night. Now they've applied for 15,000 watts day and 215 watts night. 1280 KWHI in Brenham, Texas, is licensed for U1, 1,000 watts day, 72 watts night. They applied for U5, 10,000 watts day, 72 at night, but now that's been amended. The request is for U5, 3,800 watts day and 72 at night. 1430 KCWK, North Las Vegas, Nevada. A new station not yet on the air has a CP for U4, 5,000 watts during the day, 370 at night. This latest application requests a change in city of license to Laughlin, Nevada, with U4, 50,000 watts day, 310 watts night. And 1550 KWBC, Navasota, Texas, licensed for U1, 250 watts day, 26 watts night, but they applied to move to College Station, Texas, with U5, 1500 watts day and 24 at night. They then amended the application to U4, 1500 watts day, 45 at night. The original application has been dismissed in favor of the amended request. Grab your eraser now as we head to a ton of dismissals and deletions. Starting off with stations no longer on the air. They include 590 WREN Carrollton, Alabama. License canceled. Call deleted by request of licensee. 910 WNHV White River Junction, New Hampshire has been deleted. 1150 KWDO Easton, California. License canceled. Call deleted at station's request. 1370 CFOK Westlock, Alberta went off the air immediately after the new CKWB-FM 97.9 powered up without utilizing the authorized 90-day simulcast period. 1400 CKGR in Golden, British Columbia has made the move to 106.3, so now this AM station is gone from the dial. And 1550 CBE, Windsor, Ontario, went silent September 30th after 61 years of service. Moving to 97.5 on FM. Now to dismissals. 570 KNRS in Salt Lake City, Utah had a CP for U4, 50,000 watts day, 5,000 watts night, but that's been canceled by the FCC. So KNRS remains U3, 5,000 watts day and night. And an interesting story on 790 WPNN, Pensacola, Florida, is licensed for U1, 1,000 watts day and 66 at night. WPNN first applied to move to 780 with D3, 3,000 watts, daytime only. Then they applied to move to 770 with D3, 50,000 watts daytime after KJCB's 770 license was deleted. But when KCJB was reinstated, is it KJCB or KCJB? Their application for 7070 was dismissed due to what would have been co-channel interference. But the application for 780 lives on. 920 WGNU Granite City, Illinois has had their application for U4, 2,000 watts day, 600 night, dismissed by the FCC. So now WGNU remains U4, 450 watts day and 500 night. 950 KSEW Seward, Alaska's application for U1, 500 watts day and 300 watts night has been dismissed. They remain U1, 1,000 watts day and night. 1050 KCAA Loma Linda, California's CP for U4, 10,000 watts day and 35 at night, canceled. KCAA remains U4, 1,400 watts day and 35 at night. 1490 WICY, Malone, New York. Their CP was canceled for a move to 1,500 with D3, 50,000 watts daytime at the city of Moores, New York. WICY remains U1, 1,000 watts day and night in Malone. 1270 WTJZ, Newport News, Virginia. Had a CP for U4, 15,000 watts day and 1,800 watts at night, but it has been canceled. WTJZ remains U2, 1,500 watts day, 900 at night. 1530 KQSP, Shakopee, Minnesota. Had a CP for U4, 50,000 watts day and 26 watts night, but it's been canceled. KQSP remains U4, 8,600 watts day and 10 watts at night. And finally, let's catch up on some gossip. 1520 WINW Canton, Ohio. This license and these call letters have been reinstated. We sort of thought it was gone for good and Kent, Ohio would take over the void, but it's back. Perhaps some DXers in northeastern Ohio can check out the circumstances. Also returning to the airwaves, WJBY 930 Rainbow City, Alabama with Southern Gospel. WSBX 1020 Ocklockney, Georgia with Spanish Adult Hits. WDGR 1210 Dahlonega, Georgia with Ethnic Format. KCVV 1240 Sacramento, California with Spanish Religion. WGBC 1240 Chipley, Florida with a Variety Format. WHAT 1340 Philadelphia, Pennsylvania back on with a Spanish Format. WNLA 1380 Indianola, Mississippi with a Black Gospel Format. WTOD 1450 Hartsville, South Carolina with Sports. WQKC 1450 Jeffersonville, Alabama returns with Yahoo Sports. They're calling themselves 1450 The Sports Buzz. WKDR 1490 Berlin, New Hampshire with Album Rock. Parallel and unspecified FM station calling themselves The Outlaw. And WCLY 1550 Raleigh, North Carolina returns to the air with Spanish language ESPN Sports. Reported as silent, WRFV 910 Wellborn, Florida, WEZZ 930 Monroeville, Alabama, KTGO 1090 Tioga, Minnesota, as they lost their tower site and the call sign as a correction from the last issue, KRKX 1230 Rexburg, Idaho, WFUL 1270 Fulton, Kentucky, WEIC 1270, Charleston, Illinois is silent, so is WHGS 1270, Hampton, South Carolina. WFBS 1280, Berwick, Pennsylvania. KVOU 1400 in Uvalde, Texas, silent STA due to loss of the tower site. WBYU 1450, New Orleans. WOBX 1530, Wanchese, North Carolina. CJWI 1610 Montreal is off temporarily while they relocate their transmitter as part of their move to 1410. Paying FCC salaries this week, WMMG 1140 Brandenburg, Kentucky. They've been fined $10,000 for failing to maintain and make available their issues and program lists in their public inspection file. And that wraps up AM Switch for this edition. If you hear a silent station come back on or a station goes silent, be sure to drop a card or letter to the National Radio Club, P.O. Box 473251, Aurora, Colorado, 80047-3251. I'm Dave Alpert in the City of Angels, turning back our network line to Master Control so they can toss a cue to Mark Durenberger, who's fresh back from the NRC convention. Mark?
Thanks, Dave, and hello, everyone. We're just back from a great NRC WTFDA convention in Omaha, and we had a wonderful time meeting so many of you in person for the first time. Thanks to Ernie and Carl and Skip and Rick for putting on a great show. Our dear esteemed publisher, Mr. Frederick Volby, was unable to attend because he was busy putting up a million-watt TV transmitting plant in Illinois.
National Radio Club.
While he was gone, he sent me a story from the archives of WQXR New York on the occasion of the station's 75th anniversary. After reading it and checking the FCC's microfiche information, we thought the WQXR story might be of interest. First, from the WQXR New York website, and we quote, "As we mark WQXR's 75th anniversary, we're feeling pretty curious about our history. Commence the plundering of the archives. We've unearthed a ton of great artifacts to share, some we didn't even know we had, including photos, cartoons, notes, footage, recordings, and more. This particular collection of historical items is not only cool to look at, but they help to more vividly tell the story of a New York institution. Let the storytelling begin. Did you know that WQXR used to have its own in-house string quartet? Pretty fancy stuff. This quartet was a long time coming. WQXR signed a contract with the Musicians Union in the late 1930s, which began our proud tradition of regularly engaging musicians to educate the public on their artistry through live on-air performances. Early on, WQXR's music director was Eddie Brown, a violinist who brought in many performers and first developed the idea of a staff string orchestra. Beginning with a group of 10 players, with Brown as conductor and occasional soloist, the group evolved into the quartet. An in-house string ensemble wasn't Brown's only bright idea. Ingeniously, he arranged an evening of music at the Waldorf Astoria to showcase the high level of musicianship in jazz at the time, an effort to sway his classical cohort's interests in the rapidly developing genre. Inviting guests like conductor Wilfred Pelletier of the Metropolitan Opera to hear Benny Goodman, Brown's mixing of jazz and classical artists produced a vibe of mutual appreciation that spilled over to WQXR programming. At a time when 80% of airtime was devoted to classical music, the station began broadcasting blues, jazz, and swing. Another WQXR host of note from back in the day was Commander Edward Whitehead, who also had his share of advertising chops. He was a decorated British naval officer. Whitehead was the host of WQXR's This Is Britain. The program guide described the show as a program of sounds, music, and stories of England. The host takes his listeners on a personally conducted tour of the British Isles with comments based on his personal experiences. In addition to being a naval commander and radio host, Whitehead was probably best known as the on-air advertising representative for Schweppes. Whitehead's catchphrase at the time was, WQXR has Schweppervescence. Another well-known WQXR personality was Abram Chasins. He was associated with WQXR from 1941 to 1965. In addition to helping WQXR become one of the country's most celebrated music stations and winning a Peabody Award for Excellence in Broadcasting, Chasins was also an accomplished pianist, composer, and author. WQXR began its first stereophonic broadcasts in 1952. So, that's kind of public information from the station's WQXR-FM archives. What follows now is the meat. Did you know that WQXR was formerly W2XR? John Vincent Lawless Hogan, a Yale grad and communications engineer, started the station in 1929 as W2XR, an experimental television and facsimile broadcast facility. The 2 in W2XR indicated it was a non-commercial radio station. It had nothing to do with the location, as ham calls do. Hogan was a founder of the Institute of Radio Engineers in 1912. He earned 34 patents, including the invention of a single-dial radio control. The first public information on Hogan's efforts to take to the airwaves show a 1-kilowatt permit for 1550 and authorizing broadcast hours as needed for the conduct of the planned research. It's likely that the planned research was into the use of those top-end channels for the double-wide transmission of so-called high-fidelity AM radio. You'll recall the FCC tried that experiment. They authorized double-wide channels in the hopes that people would transmit out to 20 kilocycles. In 1936, the FCC granted Hogan 5 kilowatts and a licensee change to Interstate Broadcast Company, and W2XR officially became WQXR. In 1940, the FCC approved a request for 10 kilowatts, a move to 1560, and a directional antenna system. The wideband experiment was put to sleep, and the adjacent frequencies in the 1500s were opened up. The station operated non-directional on 1560 for several years under special authorization. While NARBA had verified WQXR's 1560 channel, the special temporary authority was conditioned on Cuba's right to complain about interference if that country also built on 1560. Then in 1946, the commission granted WQXR 50 kilowatts, subject to full-time directional operation. The station, for some reason, kept requesting delays for its 50-kilowatt build-out, finally completing the work in 1956 for the sale to the New York Times. The 1956 transmission system was changed to DA2, different pattern at night, due to the need to protect co-channel Bakersfield, California, and they had to add a third tower. Interestingly, the WQXR authorization allowed the station to stay on daytime until local sunset Bakersfield time, giving the New York station a great advantage in the states east of California. As we said, WQXR AM was the first station in New York to experiment with broadcasting in stereo in 1952. During some of their live concerts, they used two microphones positioned 6 feet apart. The mic on the right led to their AM feed, and the one on the left to their FM transmitter. So a listener could position two radios 6 feet apart and listen in some form of stereo. And how about that FM side? WQXR-FM is the outgrowth of that high-fidelity experiment on 1550. One of the station's listeners was the inventor of frequency modulation, Edward Howard Armstrong. When Armstrong put his experimental FM station, W2XMN, on the air, he arranged to rebroadcast some of WQXR's high-fidelity AM programming. This ended in 1939 when Hogan put his own experimental FM station on the air, W2XQR, just down the dial from Armstrong at 42.3 megahertz. When the Federal Communications Commission began licensing commercial FM stations, W2XQR moved to 45.9 and became W59NY, one of the special five-letter FM call signs. W59NY later became WQXQ. When the FM band was moved from 42 to 50 megs to its present frequency range of 88 to 108, WQXQ moved to 97.7. Within a few years, the station had adopted its current call sign, WQXR-FM, and was assigned to 96.3. During the 1950s, WQXR-FM's programming was also heard on the Rural Radio Network in upstate New York. Both the WQXR AM and FM sides continued to simulcast each other until 1965, when the FCC began requiring commonly owned AM and FM stations in large markets to broadcast separate programming. In 1962, the QXR network was sold, but WQXR remained under New York Times ownership. After briefly attempting to sell the stations in 1971, the New York Times was able to get a waiver of the simulcasting rules. The stations continued to duplicate each other until 1992, when the AM side changed its programming from classical to popular standards, becoming WQEW. In 1998, the Times entered into a long-term lease for WQEW with ABC, a move which brought Radio Disney to New York. The Times also included a purchase clause in the lease contract, and ABC exercised the option to buy 1560 in 2007. This left WQXR-FM as the Times' lone radio station. And then in 2009, Univision Radio bought the 96.3 station and swapped it with its own weaker 105.9 channel. Classical WQXR-FM moved from 96.3 to 105.9, while Univision's Spanish WCAA moved to 96.3 and relaunched as WXNY-X96.3. WQXR is now co-operated with WNYC-AM. And what of WNYC, itself a heritage call in New York? The idea of a city-owned and operated radio station began in 1922 with Grover A. Whalen, New York City's commissioner for plant and structures. Working behind the scenes, Whalen got his radio proposal placed before the City Board of Estimate, and in June of that year they approved $50,000 for the establishment of a municipal wireless broadcasting station. Getting on the air took 2 more years and a few hurdles to jump in the process. For one thing, transmitters were not readily available. After some searching, Whalen found a second-hand one in Brazil that had been used for that country's centennial celebration. They shipped it north, and in 1924, WNYC began broadcasting at 570. In 1928, WNYC was forced into a time-sharing arrangement on 570 with WMCA, another pioneering New York radio outlet. This situation lasted until the early 1930s, when the FCC moved WNYC to 810 AM, 1 kilowatt directional, daytime only. The frequency move did not help WNYC from an operational standpoint, as it now had to share its frequency with the much more powerful WCCO in Minneapolis. In 1934, New York Mayor Fiorella LaGuardia seriously considered shutting down WNYC, but appointed a citizens' committee to consider all the options. The committee, including CBS Chief William Paley, recommended WNYC stay on the air as a public voice. In 1937, the transmitter was moved from the municipal building to a new facility on the East River in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. In 1941, the North American Radio Broadcasting Agreement shifted WNYC's dial position a second time to 830 kilohertz. Well, WCCO was moved to 830 as well and was given clear channel authority. So WNYC would have to remain a 1,000-watt daytime-only outlet for the next 48 years. There's an entire textbook on the ensuing battle between WNYC and WCCO. WNYC was granted special operating authority to extend daytime non-directional hours to local sunset in Minneapolis and as late as 10 p.m. New York time. WCCO fought back. Then in 1989, WNYC found a way to move from 830 to 820 kilohertz. That gave them around-the-clock operations, increasing daytime power to 10,000 watts with a kilowatt at night. The Brooklyn transmitters ceased operations, and the AM side moved to Belleville Turnpike in Kearny, New Jersey, sharing space on WMCA's three towers. WNYC began regularly scheduled broadcasts on FM in the old band at 43.9. Known originally as W39NY, the FM outlet adopted its present WNYC-FM identity and its present dial position at 93.9. In 1995, Mayor Giuliani split WNYC Radio from its sister television station, and a risk arose that the radio stations might be sold off to corporate interests. In 1997, the station was saved by its sale to the nonprofit WNYC Foundation. This put an end to the occasional political intrusions of the past. The terrorist attacks of 9/11 destroyed WNYC's FM transmitter atop the World Trade Center. The station's studios in the nearby municipal building had to be evacuated, and station staff was unable to return to its offices for 3 weeks. WNYC temporarily moved to the studios of National Public Radio's New York Bureau in Midtown Manhattan, where it broadcast on its AM outlet, 820 kilohertz. And that closes the loop and brings us back to WQXR. In 2009, WNYC took control of classical music station WQXR-FM. WQXR's intellectual property, the call letters and the format, was acquired from the New York Times Company as part of the deal with Univision Radio. The arrangement resulted in WQXR becoming a non-commercial educational station and WNYC-FM dropping its remaining classical music programming to become a full-time news talk station. And New York Public Radio was on the grow. Earlier this year, the New Jersey Public Broadcasting Authority agreed to sell 4 FM stations in northern New Jersey to New York Public Radio. The 4 stations previously belonged to New Jersey Network's statewide radio service. They were rebranded as New Jersey Public Radio. And that's one whale of a New York tale. There'll be more in a future broadcast, but for today, we've run out of time. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. Thanks again to those of you who made it to Omaha. It was really nice to place names with faces and names with personal stories. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And we hope you'll be back here at this same dial spot in just 30 days. Until then, good listening, DXers.
You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
Long wave fades away in the UK. The BBC has operated a nationwide service on long wave in Great Britain since 1926, but the end of that long history may be imminent. The BBC's Director General recently declared that the 500-kilowatt transmitter at Droitwich, south of Birmingham, will be decommissioned once the last of its transmission tubes dies. The tubes, or valves to the British, are no longer being manufactured, and BBC budget cutbacks have ruled out the purchase of a new long-wave transmitter to replace the aging one in use. The Guardian newspaper reports that BBC engineers have stockpiled the remaining tubes, about 10 of them, but once they're gone, the 198 kilohertz signal that covers most of the British Isles will fall silent. The long-wave signal mostly simulcasts the Radio 4 talk service that's heard across the UK on FM. But there is a small, very loyal audience still dependent on longwave to reach remote areas with no FM service. The longwave version of Radio 4 also carries some specialty programming, cricket test match broadcasts, a daily religious service, and parliamentary coverage that's not heard on FM. BBC officials say they'll find new ways to deliver that programming once the longwave service goes away.
Sending a pleasant shudder up the backbone of many a hobbyist and ham, Heathkit says that it's back into the kit business. The first kit will be a garage parking assistant, the company states on its website. The garage parking assistant kit lets you build your own system that uses ultrasonic waves to locate your car as it enters the garage. The system signals to the driver, using LED lights mounted on the wall, when the car is detected and in the perfect spot for parking. The kit consists of two assemblies, an LED display in kit form, and a pre-assembled ultrasonic range module. The kit will include everything you need to complete the project except a soldering iron and hand tools. The second planned item is a wireless swimming pool monitor kit, followed by many more. Specifically included are amateur radio kits.
The FCC has decided it will allow AM stations in the U.S. to use technologies that reduce transmitter power consumption, techniques that have been available to broadcasters elsewhere for years. In the United States, Nautel and Harris offer such technology for AM use, and Nautel's Tim Hardy has been a vocal proponent in recent years. Alaska Public Broadcasting Incorporated Director of Engineering Chuck Lakatus has been particularly active in exploring this and spoke about his experience at the spring NAB show, so AM owners probably owe him a particular thank you right now, or maybe a penny for each dollar saved on their power bills. Stations will still need a waiver of rules to proceed, but the Bureau has set up procedures to seek the waiver, and it indicated it would approve requests that use the Nautel and Harris options. Such technologies, known generally as modulation-dependent carrier level, or MDCL for short, control technologies or algorithms and have long been used by international broadcasters operating high-powered AM transmitters, according to the FCC staff. Easier implementation of MDCL algorithms and higher energy costs have recently made these techniques more attractive to domestic broadcasters. The amount of energy saving depends on various factors, but the FCC said that in typical cases, power consumption of an AM transmitter can be reduced by 20% to 40%. Tim Hardy at Nautel was quoted by Radio World's Leslie Stimson earlier this year saying it would be fairly easy to save $20,000 a year if you have a 50-kilowatt AM transmitter running 24 hours a day based on modest electricity rates. The Media Bureau in its announcement offered a short history, noting that in the 1980s, European entities like the BBC, AEG Telefunken and ABB Group developed algorithms to reduce power consumption by radio transmitters. The commission staff noted that the reduction in AM signal power at certain modulation levels inevitably exacts some penalty upon audio quality. Depending on the content of the audio program, the algorithms may introduce some audio distortion or may decrease the signal-to-noise ratio in the receiver. They may also erode coverage slightly at the fringes of your protected service area. Both the long experience of transmitter manufacturers and broadcasters abroad and the initial reports from experimental operations in Alaska, however, indicate that such adverse effects are generally imperceptible. That's some highly technical information in Radio World directed to radio station operators. What does it mean to us as DXers? It's going to get a little bit harder to chase that DX target.
Say what? All of you cassette tape revivalists are in for some bad news. The Oxford English Dictionary is getting rid of the term altogether. Time reports that for a new edition, the dictionary is cutting the beloved term along with words like brabble and growlery. The decision isn't exactly controversial, but it does have some pretty upset. Take, for example, Bucks Burnett, a music historian who owns the 8-Track Museum, who had a bone to pick with the dictionary company. I'm going to ban the Oxford Dictionary from the museum. I have a copy and I'm going to recycle it, Burnett said. This decision to remove the word was made inside a Starbucks by 20-something editors on their lunch break. Time points out that while words like brabble aren't really used anymore, cassette tapes aren't necessarily ancient, especially because the things are still being manufactured.
From Wayne Heinen, he wants us to know that the IRCA Mexican Log 16th edition, which is winter of 2011, is presently out and available. The IRCA Mexican Log lists all AM stations in Mexico by frequency, including call letters, state, city, day and night powers, slogan, schedule in UTC and GMT format, the format of the station, networks, and notes. The call letter index gives a call frequency and city and state. The city index is listed by state, then city, and includes the frequency, call letters, and day and night power. The transmitter site index lists by state, then city, and tabulates the latitude and longitude of each transmitter site. Now, this is an indispensable reference for anyone who hears Mexican radio stations. Size of this publication is 8.5 by 11. Price is $9.50 for U.S. and Canadian National Radio Club members, $11.50 if you live in Mexico, and $12.50 for the rest of the world. And Wayne would like to let us know that they have nailed down the price and the postage for the AM radio log. It's part number ARL, that's the National Radio Club AM radio log. For members, it's $19.95, non-members $25.95, members in Canada $26, and non-members in Canada $30. Overseas airmail to Western Europe and Australia, New Zealand and Japan is $34, and all others, please contact the National Radio Club's Publication Center for details. The AM radio log is a very valuable asset for people who want to know a little bit about what they're hearing on the AM radio dial.
From Amityville to Aquaba, they're dressing up for another great night on Long Island. Even WGLI puts on its nighttime pattern. You'll want to stay with us for more of everything. More music, more news, more features. Right here on the Mighty 1290 or on WGLI FM.
Because you're listening to WGLI. It's a friendly sound. So stick around at 1290 WGLI in Babylon.
At this time, please turn over your tape to side two.